to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
And I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're on to 1995 with Autechre's third LP, an undisputed all-timer, Tri Repete, plus two of the more celebrated EPs in Autechre's entire discography, Garbage and Anvil Vapor, also from 1995. I've got to start once again by saying thank you to everyone who's listened, subscribed, told a friend, and given us a 5-star rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're a first-time listener and you like the show, we'd really appreciate it if you did all or some of those things, especially that 5-star rate and review. Also, thank you so much to everyone who's emailed us since our last episode. We're going to work a few of those emails into the discussion today, but we got so many that we've decided to record a little bonus episode devoted entirely to your opinions and hot takes next week. That means you've still got plenty of time to tell us how you feel about Tri Repete, Garbage, and Anvil Vapor, so email us, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Of course, you can also send us your thoughts about our next topic, Chiastic Slide, Envane, and Sickly Sweet. And in fact, we're a little unsure if the Sickly Sweet EP counts as an essential release that we should cover. So email us and let us know, gonkcastpod@gmail.com, or tweet us at gonkcastpod. You'll find all that contact info in the show notes of every episode. From what I understand, that Sickly Sweet EP is not actually related at all to the track that it purports to be remixing. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious, but yeah, let us know, if we should cover it for sure, and maybe what you think about it as well. Okay, enough preamble and on to the main event. Dan, what background info do we need to know about Tri Repete?
Yeah, so Autechre and, of course, Warp Records released Tri Repete on November 6th, 1995, which means that the 25th anniversary is just 2 weeks away. Hey. Here in the U.S. However, Tri Repete wasn't released until March 16th, 1996, when it was packaged by Wax Track and TVT Records with the Garbage and Anvil Vapor EPs as Tri Repete +++, but we'll get to those a little later. Also, I'm sure everyone listening already knows this, but a sticker on the cover of Tri Repete famously expresses Autechre's preference for the vinyl version of the LP. The CD sticker says incomplete without surface noise, while the vinyl sticker says the opposite.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little later as well. In regard to reception, I think it's fair to say that Tri Repete is widely considered to be a highlight of Autechre's discography and electronic music as a whole. AllMusic gave it a whopping 5 stars out of 5. The Edgelords over at Pitchfork gave it a 9 out of 10. And it's currently the highest rated Autechre album on Rate Your Music with an average rating of 3.79 out of 5. Technically, Tri Repete is tied with LP5 and Confield, but it has way more ratings, so by Rate Your Music's rules, it wins. Maybe we should pause to hash this out a little bit, Dan. What is your sense of Tri Repete's status? I mean, do you ever hear people bad-mouthing it?
I don't think so, you know? Maybe outside my wife, but...
yeah.
No, I've always felt like that is, you know, one of these sort of undisputed classics of the, 90s Warp Records scene. I know it's one of the, early, electronic records I ever heard when I was first getting into that kind of stuff. I did a little reading, through people's, opinions on Rate Your Music. And, it's overwhelmingly positive, but you do have your hot takers. There's a couple 1-star right. reviews and 1.5 just on the, first page. So that surprised me a little bit. I'm a little surprised that the score is not slightly higher, but, you've always got your naysayers.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Autechre is just a little difficult by nature, mm-hmm. and all of their Rate Your Music ratings are like, at least half a point too low because of the normies, I guess. But
true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Tri Repete is just so classic. It's like so enshrined, in the Mount Rushmore of electronic music that, it's reached that point where you can seem a little interesting if you shit on it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the old the Beatles are overrated hot take.
I think it's kind of in that zone. And so I do see a little bit of like, oh, this is the worst Autechre album. And like, okay, that makes you kind of cool and interesting. And I really don't, I feel like Autechre is such a diverse discography that like I understand if this is not somebody's favorite. But I don't know. I think it's fair to say that it's probably at least one of their very best, but we'll get more into that. As always, some of the albums and EPs we're going to talk about will be newer to us than others. I'm guessing that is not the case with Tri Repete, but how would you describe your previous familiarity and personal history with this album?
Yeah, I mean, like I alluded to a second ago, you know, this is something I got into, you know, very early. I'm sure Aphex Twin, you know, was of course one of the first things I heard, you know, Boards of Canada. You know, we used to go on this, like message board site that was for trading music. It was called Yahtzee. And, you know, people would always just make these threads that were like, you know, the 10 best electronic records or you know, the best, you know, records from Warp or something. And, I would just spend, and I know you did too, like just a lot of time, like downloading all that stuff and then trying it out, you know, just out of, you know, curiosity. And I found like so much stuff, that way. And Tri Repete is one that I came to, you know, I don't remember exactly, you know, what the thread was or anything, but, it was definitely the first Autechre release I ever heard. And, you know, I don't remember never not liking it. You know, I don't want to sound cool like I, you know, loved it from, you know, first listen or anything. But, you know, I don't remember a time when I didn't love it. And I mean, it definitely led me down the wormhole of the rest of Autechre's releases. And, you know, so it really... my gateway into Autechre and I mean electronic music and I mean honestly kind of experimental music in general. You know, it's probably one of the first you know minimalist things I ever heard or anything like that, so I guess I owe it a great deal.
Yeah I think I'm in the same boat. Probably a big turning point for me. I mean, I must have gotten into Aphex Twin because of, I don't know, some Radiohead shout out or Bjork shout out or something.
Yeah.
You know, I know he did a little remix work for her, but that got me into the Warp catalog. And, you know, I quickly got to this record and it was just like, yeah, really, really mind blowing. I couldn't even figure it out, honestly, because it's not like as immediately fun as, you know, Aphex Twin or something like that. But it just like, I was just transfixed. Like, I don't know, you know, we'll get into it more, but it's like, the opening track, Dale or whatever. We're gonna have to decide how we're gonna pronounce some of these tracks.
I know.
Firmly in the unpronounceable territory with some of these, but the opening track, you know, with that like weird bass groan, you know, that's like running through the, like, I don't even know how to describe what that sound is, but that was like, you know, turning that on for me was like the opening guitar sound on My Bloody Valentine's Loveless, you know, the only shallow track or something. It was like one of those, like, I've never heard a fucking sound like this. I cannot believe what I'm hearing. Like, it just, yeah, just blew my mind wide open. You know, that being said, I mean, it's a long, it's a difficult album. And I feel like it was also one of those special records where it was like, I don't know, 6 months later that I fell in love with the B-side. You know what I mean? Like, you know, those like really slow growers, but I don't know. This is one that I listen to all the time. It's like just one of my absolute all-time favorite albums. So unlike with Incunabula and Amber, reviewers are not so bad about endlessly comparing Tri Repete with Autechre's future releases. I've complained about this on the last couple episodes, but I still want to try, just at first, to talk about the album, you know, as if we were hearing it in November of 1995, right? So that being said, how would you describe the overall sound of Tri Repete?
You know, it's definitely like a colder, I think, than the two previous releases. The Pitchfork review, it said something like it takes away the cheesiness of Incunabula and Amber, and they're referencing, you know, we talked about it on the previous episodes, how you know, Autechre themselves had said that those two records, right, you know, were quote unquote cheesy, you know, and it's like stripping those little things away. You know, I love both of those records, but this really, we're almost getting completely into that, you know, sound design territory. You know, that there's much fewer sounds here that, like, I know where they came from. I mean, like you said, that opening, you know, beat on Dale or Dahl, whatever. Yeah. You know, it really is like only shallow. You know, I mean, it's still to this day, like when I hear that, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I'm in for the ride, you know. But you know, we've got like a much more like a mechanical, cold, you know, like humanless, you know, we like Incunabula, you talked about how in comparing, we determined comparing to old records was fine. Just
yeah, perfectly, you know, fine.
Yeah. You know, you described Incunabula was like, you know, it sounded like two people, you know, playing a beat or whatever, and then modulating it, you know, twisting knobs and everything. Yeah, you know, there was still that like human kind of connection to it. Amber has that to some extent, but you know, it's going away. And I feel like here on Trirepite, it's either completely gone or it's, you know, very close to being gone. We're just building like such atmosphere. It's minimal, it's mechanical. I don't know, what would you add?
Yeah, I mean, like in terms of sound design, you know, I kept mentioning with Amber that it felt like these were once recognizable sounds that have been like twisted out of shape, you know, but you can still kind of like tell that it's like a snare sound that's been like stretched out and like messed up. This is like, these sounds are just kind of built from the ground up for the most part. I think it's like they're just wholly, you know, not just that Dale beat, but like, you know, I wrote down all over the place here, like the bass, the kick on Rotar or whatever is like, I don't even know how to describe it. I couldn't even write down. I'm just writing down like, I don't know how to describe this. And like just these sounds that, yeah, just wholly newly constructed. You know, it's interesting because in that respect, it feels like sort of a leap forward from Amber, or like a, I don't know, like a fulfilling the promise of Amber in a way. You know, and yet this feels less like, I don't know, if Amber was like a big leap forward, this is a breakthrough. And yet it is kind of a left turn away from Amber in a lot of ways, you know, because it is very percussive. Like it is massively rhythmic. Mm-hmm. It is quite, I don't know, propulsive. I mean, there's kind of like a slow lumbering feel to a lot of these tracks. And yet the beats are pretty aggressive. You know, they're like pretty gnarly. They're pretty, you know, harsh, abrasive. There's a lot of really glitchy type sounds here that are, I don't know, just like screaming in your face, like tracks like Stud and stuff. They have this like piercing high frequency that is almost like grating on the ears, you know? And I don't know, you just think of like Amber as like kind of drifting along like this cloud or something. And this is so in your face. It's also so much drier, you know, like there's not that use of reverb or delays or echoes all over the place like there were on Amber. It is like really crisp, like hard cut type of sounds. And it's just like, I don't know, it's kind of like bashing you in the head. You know what I mean? It's like very aggressive album.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like part of that mechanical feel, you know, it's like, you know, I don't mean it in the genre way, but it's like very kind of industrial, you know, like, you know, it sounds like, you know, machines or metal or something, you know? But yeah, you're right. I mean, it really doesn't have like that kind of, you know, real lush reverby sound like that we love from Amber. But it like works. I think what you said is really apt. You know, it really like fulfills the promise of Amber. You know, Amber is a great record, but you know, it's like, you know, I don't know how to say it, but you know, it's a great record, but it just, it's like a 9, you know, it's just not like, it's not fully, you know, a 100% classic, you know, 10 out of 10 kind of thing. And I mean, that's difficult for a band, you know, to follow up, especially like, you know, on a third record to come and, you know, and fulfill that promise and do something that is so different. But like, you know, really like one ups it. It's so great, you know. I mean, I think it would be so easy for Ottecker or anybody to like, you know, sort of lean on what you did previously, especially when it worked. You know, I mean, Amber had decent reviews and stuff. It would be so easy to just keep doing that, you know, and fall into that thing. But you know, I mean, they take such risks, and I mean, they continue to do that their entire career. And I think, like, I mean, that's why it's worth doing, you know, a podcast like this on them, because, you know, if we were just getting, you know, 5 more Trirepites after this, you know, this podcast would be boring as hell.
Right. Yeah. And they're going to like leave this pretty quickly, honestly. I mean, I feel like, I don't know, some people will strongly disagree with me on this, but I feel like with Incunabula and Amber, Ottecker is kind of like, I don't know, really into the whole warp aesthetic, the whole artificial intelligence aesthetic, and they seem to be kind of searching for like an alternative to club music or something, like electronic music that is for close listening or for like messing with your brain and stuff like that. And you know, we talked about how that's cool and that's pretty exciting in the history of music, but I feel like they're just kind of like, okay, well, what would that even look like? Like, there's just nothing to even like, you know, they're like, oh, okay, we could do like, you know, kind of these dense, like drifting clouds of sound, and you're like, are going to kind of listen and search through it and everything. And then it's like, there's this eureka moment with Triripete, which is like, people listening at home also like bangers. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
These tracks are fucking banging. This is the first Autechre record that gonks, you know, this is the birth of the gonk, honestly. And it's like, I don't know. I just feel like it is such a, it's like where it all clicks into place is when they realize that like it can be totally slamming and still completely hypnotic and like captivating in a kind of like brain music kind of way. And so I don't know. I love that juxtaposition. I wanted to mention, you know, we've already sort of gotten into like how it compares with the previous work, but All Music has this line: it fully confirms Autechre's evolution into electronic noise kings. I mean, I think it's kind of a fascinating thing to say because I don't know, there were like tiny hints of it on Amber, but this is like a big step into the arena of noise. You know what I mean? Like there is like such harsh grating sound that like it feels like in the world of power electronics or like even like harsh noise, you know, type, you know, there are parts on this record that are just like so abrasive. It's like, as if he's sampling a little clip from like Merzbow or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Amber, I think is mostly devoid of that. I mean, you know, we talked about it. There's the odd, you know, snare sound that's obviously like manipulated or, you know, isn't like a traditional, you know, drum kind of sound. But yeah, I don't think everything still kind of stays like in the like melodic, you know, quote unquote, you know, music sort of world. But yeah, I mean, things here on Triripete, stray from that and definitely get in the noise territory. I mean, Stud is the easy, you know, track to talk about that. I mean, there's like that slurping, like it's like tape being pulled, you know, like through a head or something. And yeah, I mean, just stuff like that is all over the place here. And I think it really, you know, does confirm them as electronic noise kings. You know, I think that's what makes them. That's what separates them from the Warp Pack and, you know, makes them so interesting. You know, like as much as Aphex Twin is great and stuff, you know, he's not doing this kind of stuff. He's kind of making those, you know, everything's sort of fun bangers, you know, or the ambient, you know, kind of works. But I don't feel like
he's still kind of like a composer. Like he composes with music.
And exactly.
Like composing with sound. It's like, you know, and what's so revelatory, I think, about this album, like the most revelatory thing is that the hook of each track is the sound of it, which to me is like my favorite part of Autechre, you know, spoiler alert, moving forward. It's like, you know, you think about like Yuto or something, that huge, the beefiest synth I've ever heard in my life to this day, you know, 25 years later, like that huge, like sliding synth noise. It's not that that's a catchy like melody, it's just that the sound is so captivating, you know what I mean? Like you can't stop thinking about it. And like that bass thing on Dale, you know, it's like, it's not catchy per se, but it's like you are hooked by the sound, you know what I mean? It's such a fascinating difference.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I've talked about it on our other podcast that we do, and I think even on episodes of this, you know, I really like, you know, what I love about Autechre is that like sound design stuff. I mean, you know, I said Triripete is probably like what really was like the doorway to like experimental music and stuff for me. I don't know what it is, but I just, yeah, I love hearing like sounds I've never heard before. And you know, when I listen to electronic music, it's not that I'm listening, you know, because, you know, it's like a catchy song, you know, if I want that, you know, I'll listen to, you know, a regular, you know, music. I listen to that, you know, just to either, I mean, in this sort of, you know, artificial intelligence sort of way of, you know, sitting headphones, you know, it like exploring the sound, you know, layers in your mind or whatever, or, you know, even, you know, you can use it as background stuff too, you know, reading or whatnot. We, you know, we've talked about doing that, but yeah, that's like what I love about experimental music. And you know, we talked about it, like me and you both make experimental music ourselves and stuff. And that's why, you know, I've wanted to do that. Or, you know, we always like, or we, you know, never when we like make a song, are we like, you know, this will be 3/4/4 and we'll do, you know, it's always like,
we're just like tweaking stuff and then yeah, a sound happens and we're like, that was an awesome sound. Let's like exactly. build something out of that. And yeah, I feel like these tracks are totally constructed the same way. And it's like, it's brilliant. Every song has like sounds that I am just absolutely fascinated by. Let me hit you with a couple other lines from reviews that jumped out at me as I was doing some research this week. Sputnik Music says, there probably isn't a melodic note on the whole record. Now, this is fascinating to me because there is obviously a lot of melody on this album, like tons of it, you know? And yet it is constructed in such a way that I really agree. You could listen to this like dozens of times and still think there's no melody on the album. Like, to me, that is an incredible accomplishment. Like the way these things are built, like you kind of get what I'm getting at. Like there's yeah. a lot of melody, but it's like hidden or just so seamlessly weaved into the track. And it's like, so there's so much misdirection in the way these things are constructed that you would be like, oh, I'm just listening to machines. You don't realize how much like actual melody and honestly emotion there is here.
Yeah, no, I think misdirection is a good way to put it. You know, like I was thinking, and this is one of the reasons it's so good to like, you know, kind of it just lay back and explore like these kind of records. You know, like you'll listen to a song and, you know, what you hear up front, you know, if you're not paying attention, is just that machine noise or, you know, the percussion. But then, you know, there's like some real like sort of angelic, you know, synth going on behind yeah. it, you know, but it's so like, not even that it's buried, it's just woven so like deeply in there that yeah, you can either completely miss it or just, I think your mind can't put, you know, like with everything else going on, that there could be such a like, you know, like I wish I could remember exactly which song it is, but there's one, it's like so angelic that you know, it really it's just, it's such a strange like juxtaposition.
Yeah, I mean, like stuff like, you know, like Clipper has like a lot of, it's got like some string work on there and stuff, and it's got like pretty,
yeah, I think that's what I meant actually. Yeah, I think
pretty
that's
beautiful,
the track I'm thinking of.
Grand string work, you know, stuff like Over And obviously has like very pretty, almost Aphexian melody to it. You know, just lots of like really pretty little touches here, but I don't know. I always think of it like, I hear people describe this album as like, oh, I feel like I'm just listening to a factory or something like that. And, you know, and like even you said that it's got kind of like a cold, mechanical, industrial feel to it. And I totally agree. And yet I feel like it also gives you, it gives me a lot of feelings of like, I don't know, like weird, like despair or like, you know, this menacing kind of like fear or something. And I think of it kind of like, I don't know, if you're watching a film, or let's say you're watching a documentary, right? And it was just showing footage of a factory. You know, you don't always realize like on a conscious level how much the, you know, stuff like the lighting or the way the, you know, the angles and like the actual shot and like maybe even some background music and stuff is like manipulating your emotion. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You can almost forget that you are still being like made to feel some way about the like pure images you're looking at. I feel like this album works in kind of the same way, which is like just incredible for in the musical world. I think you feel like you're listening to like just this hard, mechanical, emotionless factory sound, you know, and yet there are these light touches of melody and stuff that can easily go unnoticed, but they're like really influencing the way you feel about, you know, because it feels a little dystopian, right? Like a little apocalyptic here.
Oh yeah, you know, I always like, I mean, I love the movie Blade Runner, and this like record sort of makes me think of that. Not like the soundtrack of Blade Runner, but like just, you know, the way it looks. You know, it's sort of this grand, you know, cityscape, but then it's dirty and dystopian and beaten down, you know, on the ground level of everything. And you know, this record like really feels like Blade Runner looks to me.
Yeah, I'm just so impressed by that. You feel like you're looking at something with no human input, and yet there's a ton there, and it actually is determining the way you feel. Okay, here's another one from the like a press release that came with the 2016 like vinyl reissue of this album. It mentioned going back to the group's roots as B-boys, Tri Repete features 10 variations on street sounds from hip hop and techno to industrial and jungle. That kind of like struck me as strange. You know, I never thought of it in this way, but actually like after reading that and listening to this a lot more, I mean, there is kind of like a, you know, like I was just mentioning that eureka moment of like, hey, you know, close listening music can still slap. It's like there are pretty heavy beats that maybe originated from hip hop and jungle and stuff. Like you can almost hear that, but it's been so transformed. But do you still hear that influence at all?
Oh yeah, I mean for sure. I think is especially like you know any of these earlier Ateca records, you could really tell they come from like a hip hop ish background. But here, I think they do such a better job showing it than in Amber. You know, because I mean I think a lot of these songs, Yuto or whatever, in particular, like really has like a, you know, hip hop kind of drum machine beat underneath it. It's just a lot of times like those drum sounds are so warped, manipulated, sampled from things that are not traditionally, you know, drum sounds that it's easy to like sort of not see that. But I think like, you know, if you took like the you know beats of these songs and replaced it with like, you know, when this weird sound is supposed to be the snare, if you put like a you know a regular snare sound, a regular bass drum sound, it would just be a hip hop beat.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they could be like broken down in that way. I just think it's so fascinating because, like I was saying before, it's like Amber. Maybe they were trying to like escape their roots a little bit, like move forward, and then it's like they just realize here that maybe the best way to move forward is to like stop trying to escape the roots of this style of music and kind of like embrace them and reinvent them in new and creative ways. But it's still got almost like the hip hop spirit. I mean, that's why like this record is so propulsive. It's like so, the beats are just so, I don't know, aggressive and like just slamming. So some similar notes we got from listener emails. Here's one from listener A. Traeger. He said, Dale was the first Autechre track that really blew my mind. Total cyborg future hip hop. You know, again, the hip hop mention. And then we got a listener email from Brooke all the way in New Zealand, which is pretty cool. He said, I heard some tracks of Incunabula and Amber, but found them boring. He was kind of walking me through how he got into Autechre. And eventually he says, luckily I stumbled across Dale from Tri Repete. What I loved was that it was recognizably music to me. I already had an affinity for electronic, but it had this cold, inhuman, mechanical feel. It made me feel like the darkest, grooviest robot apocalypse had descended on the world. It made me dance like a madman. It was so far removed from anything I'd ever heard before, though I already really loved Aphex Twin, yet so immediately appreciable. I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, am I alone in like, up until this week, I feel like I never thought of this record as like groovy or danceable, but this, it makes perfect sense, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think their description is really great, actually, you know? I mean, Dale is like such a good opening track on this record. I mean, we sort of already mentioned it a little bit, but I think it just like just that first sound you hear just immediately like gets you into this world of what Tri Repete will be and sets the scene so perfectly. And I feel like if you love that first noise you hear, you're gonna love this record. You know, you're in for such a great ride. I mean, like you said, I mean, just like my Bloody Valentine, you know, I think like those, you know, that's such a good you know comparison.
These dancing you know, just really, I don't know, like kind of frisky like hi-hats on that track that are like super distorted, like they sound like totally blown out, but they're like really extremely high energy, and it's just like you've got this like low bass groan that's just like rolling through the track, and yet the whole thing is like so propulsive, like so high energy. And then you've got those like you know, those like vocal samples. We've talked about how we don't really like when Odd-Tekker does the vocal sample thing, and yet here it works in a fascinating way, because they're like, you know, it's like chopped up in a very hip-hop way, honestly. And it just like, I don't know, it sounds as alien as any of the other sounds here, even though I know it's a human voice. I almost forget it's a human voice at points.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember what song it was that we sort of complained about that. I think it was something on Anti. You know, it was just like a recognizable voice, and just sort of like takes you out of the moment a bit. But here, yeah. I think you're right. You know, it is just another sound that's been, you know, messed with. Like, yeah, sure, you know, I might be able to assume that it's a human voice, but it's so, you know, it's not in your face. You know, it's like woven into this tapestry they've created.
Yeah, yeah. And also I want to shout out, I never really appreciated it, but Sea Patch is absolutely a banger. I feel like you could play this at the club and like everybody would just love it, because it's like it's really fascinating, like sound design wise, and it's actually kind of like playful, because they're like these weird stretched out like bending little noises all over your head, you know. But it's really just bumping. I mean, it's just absolutely a delight. We could sort of return to that. I want to talk, though, about the sort of aesthetic of this album, the cover art or lack thereof, album title, track titles, etc. Maybe this is a good point to introduce something I think we'll talk about a lot in the future, which is something like the mystery of Odd-Tekker. I feel like this is such an important part of their appeal, which is like how mysterious it is. You know, the fact that you just get nothing from the, you know, track titles, the album title. You know, usually the cover art just gives you nothing at all. They seem to really embrace this, right? Like performing totally in the dark so that nobody can see their equipment or anything like that. Nobody really knows what they make their music on or how they do it. You know, I feel like they're deliberately vague in interviews and like describe it in this kind of like convoluted way that's like extremely intriguing, but also like, dude, I know you know how to explain it, but why are you being so coy about it? But this is like, you know, kind of there's an element of that for sure with like the Incunabula and Amber cover art. But this is the first time where it's just like a weird, you know, monochromatic, like ugly ass brown color with nothing. I mean, just huge barrier to entry, you know, but it makes it weirdly, I really want to know what's inside this thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I really like the album cover of this, you know, it has that like alluring quality, you know, like it's so mysterious and stuff. And then, you know, I just imagine in 1995, I guess I had a promo sticker, you know, but, you know, if you were in a record store and you look at this, you're barely getting any information, and then you turn around, you know, maybe the song titles will clue you in, and nope, not getting much help there either. You know, I like that. I mean, the mystery of a band, you know, there's plenty of like bands that I love records from, artists, you know, I love albums, but like when I truly like the artists I like truly like get super into are the ones that are like interesting. Also, you know, I mean, if anyone knows from our, you know, other podcasts and stuff, my favorite artist is Bob Dylan. And like, I love his music, but also like, I love the like mystery of Bob Dylan, you know, that you could, luckily he's famous enough that you could, you know, I've read dozens of books and articles and, you know, seen movies and everything, you know. Obviously Odd-Tekker doesn't have that kind of stuff. If anybody knows any books, shoot them my way. Yeah. But, you know, like it's like stuff to dig into. Cause you're right. Yeah. I mean, even the playing in the dark kind of thing, like I luckily got to see Odd-Tekker one time, and it really was like so cool, you know, like that it's just, they literally just turned the lights, like there was no they didn't, you know, have a video playing. Not, it was like literally just two dudes standing there in as dark as this club would get, you know, playing music. it's just like such a strange thing. And then yeah, I mean the track titles on Tri Repete are like really, you know, Amber. There's a couple, you know, we're getting there, but you know they're pretty all pronounceable and stuff. And of course, I mean things here. Clipper, you know, stud are pronounceable, but you know, we're getting away from that. We're getting into the you know, file name category. You know, the later stuff and all, like it literally just always seems like it's what they called it when they were making it. And
but it feels like a clue or something, you know?
Yeah, it exactly. Like- it there's always like, you know, like on Sign, you know, there's like the new record, there's like one song, it's called like The Red A or something, but you know, some of the letter, and it's like, what the fuck's The Red A, you know?
Yeah,
it is. It's always like just enough to get you interested, but not enough to ever figure it out. Same way how he said, you know, Sign is a initialism, like, you know, but he won't say you know what they are. That? And it's like,
but it's also like
could just be straight bullshit. Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, exactly.
It's freeing because you don't have to like you want to figure it out, but you also know that like it's not possible.
You'll never do it. Yeah, exactly.
So you can just kind of like, I don't know. It's just so in this abstract realm that it's like, I don't know. You know, like you said, there are some like recognizable words and stuff here, sort of. But that cover art to me is like kind of the first great example of like, you are giving me nothing. And yet, having said that, I was amazed to find, I did not know this until this week, but the inside of the artwork, like the sleeves and stuff inside, there's actually pictures of like weird kind of alien looking machinery. Like it looks like kind of unrecognizably weird gears and stuff, but like kind of like they're old, like they have like dirt and like even like plants growing out of them and stuff.
It's the stuff the Anvil Vapor cover's made from.
Yeah. That stuff, and that sort of appears in that video, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But that's a little on the nose, honestly, for Oddtekker, because you know everybody. I feel like even without that stuff, everybody would associate this with like machinery and gears and stuff. And I don't know, kind of funny to realize that actually what I thought was like one of the most mysterious and alluring album art, you know, ever. There's actually a little bit of a clue of like real world things that they want you to associate with it, you know?
Yeah, that's sort of a thing, you know, we lose in, you know, in the digital age, because you're right, you know, if you never like owned this record, you know, physically, you kind of don't know that. Yeah, I just looked it up on Discogs to see, you know, cause yeah, I don't like physically own this record, and I don't think I ever had it on CD or anything even back in the day. Yeah. That's sort of like a thing that gets lost, because I always just sort of, yeah, would have assumed that the inner sleeves would have just been that same color or different color or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so we're getting there. We're not fully there. Surprising that they're giving us like clues of what to associate with and stuff, but I guess for most of my life I just had very little to associate these tracks with, so it's like you get the effect that I get from later Oddtekker. Spoiler alert again. Let me hit you with a listener email from a listener who goes by Surround Guitari. He or she says, merrily awaiting the two of you to get to Chiastic Slide, where AE go off the quote-unquote slide. Just an interesting note that I've made, possibly obsession, is that Tri Repete, being the third album, could be mangled faux Latin for third repetition or repeat three times. I like to interpret this as Tri Repete being the third in a trilogy that share structural similarities, being their first three albums, and Tri Repete was the third repetition. It was the last of the early Oddtekker formula, but with Chiastic, the chains have been broken. We'll get to Chiastic Slide next time, and maybe we can even return to this thought, but it is intriguing that it's kind of like a garbled Latin for, yeah, like repeat three times or three repetitions or something like that. Again, feels like one of those things that's like so close to being a clue, but not really saying anything. But what do you make of like, it's, do you think Oddtekker was thinking of this like a trilogy or something?
I don't, because, you know, like they said that they didn't really consider like Incunabula their first record, and that it was sort of just compilation of things thrown together for Warp or whatever. I mean, I think this email is exactly what we were just talking about, you know, with this mystery of Autechre and there being these little clues and everything. And I mean, I feel like, yeah, it obviously, like, in some way is like insinuating like three repetitions or whatever. And what could that mean? I don't know. I think the easy thing is
repetitive nature of the music. Even it might not be a
maybe they mean it's their third record, and it's it's one of those things. Like we'll never know. We'll literally never get the answer.
Yeah, I do just think it's very, very intriguing, and they like to do this for some reason, which I love. Which is like just occasionally, like the record, you know, like XI or something is their 11th album, the Roman numerals XI. Mm-hmm. Or like LP5, you know, it's like they just like to remind you what number album they're on. I don't know, like they're kind of obsessed with that, and fans are obsessed with it too. That is something I wanted to mention though earlier when we were sort of describing the overall sound, is that Amber, I felt like, you know, we talked about that breakthrough of Flutter in that it was like not repetition, but permutation that they were getting interested in. And a lot of the Amber tracks, they do kind of have this like slowly evolving feel. You know, in some ways it feels like Tri-Repete is like a return to the repetitive quality of Incunabula. Hard not to describe this album as repetitive. And yet the structure of the songs is really interesting because, like, you know, Incunabula is like, okay, you get the whole thing and then you get a breakdown and then things slowly piece back together and then you get the whole thing again and it usually ends that way. You know, this is like, every track here just seems to like slowly unfurl, you know, like you are not hearing the full track until the end. Like it just, it keeps repeating and yet it keeps growing and growing. And like, you know, there are these little melodies where it's like on a lot of tracks, honestly, but it's like you're hearing like sort of a more minimalist version of them early on. And then they slowly become more melodic and more emotive as they move on. And then it's like quite beautiful by the end. I don't know. It's like a really interesting way to construct a song. I mean, and I should mention there's lots of little variations within these repetitions, but does it strike you as like a return to repetition in that way?
Oh yeah, a little bit. You know, I can see that, you know, it is sort of like, a return to that form of Incunabula, but definitely like, you know, in a less amateur way. You know, I don't mean that in a bad way, but
it's not so formulaic, I guess.
Yeah. We talked about that in the Incunabula episode. Like, it does like sort of suffer from being, you kind of know what you're gonna get on each
track. Structured like songs, you know. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Build up to the chorus, then a breakdown, then like another quote unquote chorus. But this is just like one big thing that's slowly revealed to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like all these songs, or most of them, you know, unfurl in the process of repeating, which is like a, you know, super minimalistic kind of you know, system.
It's also interesting how they like, you know, seem to like grow in intensity as they go on. This is something we can talk more about, is, you know, I want to get into some of the tracks now, and I want to ask you, what are the best tracks to you? But first, let me quiz you, as always. There are three bolded tracks on Rate Your Music, you know, the highest rated tracks on Rate Your Music. What do you think those are?
Probably Dale.
Okay.
I'm going to go Clipper and Radio, the last track, maybe.
Oh, actually, it is Dale, Clipper, and Yuto.
Oh, I almost went Yuto, but I wasn't.
Yeah, I thought you were going to get it this time. That Radio, Rizdio or whatever, is at 4.0, so I feel like it could be bolded any second now. Maybe I should jump on and give it a rating. but what are your favorite tracks here?
My favorite is Stud. You know, I just... Okay. I love how minimalistic and crazy. I feel like this is the real you know, experimental meat in this record, you know. That, like, I talked about that slurping tape noise. I just like love that sound. It's so cool. You talked about that, like, that high, you know, kind of piercing sound that's throughout it. You know, I hate to say I like it because it's like one of the more challenging songs, you know, that makes me seem like pretentious or whatever, but I guess I kind of am. I just, you know, I really like that that track the most, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's a good opportunity to talk about this kind of incomplete without surface noise thing. You know, Stud is one of the glitchiest tracks here, I think. And, you know, I downloaded like a rip of like a vinyl rip with some like extra surface noise. I know people usually try to get rid of that for these vinyl rips, but I don't know, to try to like get a sense of it. And I don't know, it's an interesting, it's like, you know, this, all right, this is the portion of the podcast where like Gabe overthinks it. That's what we'll do each week here. But it's kind of profound because the surface noise, you know, you can't tell when you're listening to a track like Stud, you cannot really tell what is surface noise and what is, you know, just the glitching and stuff on the track itself. And when I say glitch, you know, it's not like what we think of as glitch today, like, which is usually digital glitching. Like, this is very analog sounding glitching. Like, it sounds like we, you know, it sounds like weird sounds of like when you plug in a cord wrong, you know, and it's like buzzing and fizzling and when you like hit, you know, you like turn off an amp or you turn on an amp and stuff and it like makes like a weird, you know, pop sound and stuff. Like you hit the pause button and it like kind of the track like kind of like, you know, if you're working with tape, like kind of like comes to like a hard close, you know, stop or something, slow down and stop. It's like those are the kind of sounds that this is constructed from. And so when I think about that surface noise thing, it's almost like blurring the lines between the medium and the music, you know. And it's just fascinating to me because when I'm listening to this record, it feels like, again, overthinking it, but like I feel like I'm not listening to music, but that like my my sound equipment is malfunctioning sometimes, you know, like it's just popping and fucking up. And I'm like, you know, it feels like I'm listening to like a, like I didn't put a record on. I started like a sequencer that's now fucking with my shit, you know? And I don't know. It's just kind of like, it almost makes you think about it. We think about like this record is like, oh, you're listening to machinery. You're listening to a factory or something. I start to think about like, I'm listening, you know, whenever you listen to music, machinery is making that music happen. Like all sorts of like chords and things like that. You know, obviously I'm overdoing it here, but you get what I mean? Like you start, it makes me sort of think like on a meta level about like the machinery of how music is made or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think like definitely the surface noise, you know, thing that they're talking about is that analog, you know, sound. And I think like the degradation of a record, you know, if you play it on vinyl, you know, every time you play that record, it's in some way degrading. So, the surface noise is never going to be exactly the same. It's never going to... It gets worse over time. You know, the way you take care of it will change it, you know. It like kind of makes it where you know, every copy is sort of unique, you know. And I think like you know, that, I mean, that could be true for anything you listen to, you know, on vinyl, but I guess I understand like why that's, if that is their intention, you know, thinking about that, you know, that is definitely lost on a CD or even, you know, like you said, you downloaded a vinyl rip. You know, that's never going to actually change.
Always
going to
be the
you know,
same.
You've just, you know, digitally put, you know, added, you know, that distortion in there. I mean, not only that, but, you know, when you play a record, like your, you know, turntable is different than my turntable, you know, your stylus is different. I mean, your speakers are different. Your amp's different. You know, there's so many like, variables in that, that system. Whereas, you know, when you listen to something on Spotify, of course, you know, if you've got better headphones or something, but it's much more limited, you know, your sound card in your computer or, you know, but if you're using your cell phone, I mean, if me and you use the same pair of headphones, we're basically going to hear
we're having like the same experience.
Literally the exact same, you know, thing. But, you know, if we both owned a copy of this record, you know, however minute it is, you know, it is a different experience. And I think that's cool. You know, I mean, that's a, for an electronic band, you know, to like be concerned with like such a, you know, an analog kind of thing is kind of cool, you know?
Yeah. To be like concerned with the medium. I mean, it's profound because that's where like electronic music kind of comes from, which is like, you know, really like crossing wires and
yeah,
you know,
of course,
like tearing stuff apart and fucking with it. And, and just like manipulating equipment to make sounds it wasn't supposed to make.
Exactly. That's exactly what a synthesizer is. You're like literally just taking an oscillation, a hum and manipulating that to sound like music or an instrument, you know?
Yeah. So I like appreciate that this record makes me think about that. I also, though, I feel like it's almost like fundamental to the record itself. You know, I'm talking about like, you know, some of my favorite tracks here. I feel like I've listened to this album so much that like my favorite tracks have changed a lot. But these past 2 weeks, like the ones that were really sticking out at me was that little stretch between like Letterell, Rotor, and then Stud, as you mentioned. And I just love like, you know, if you think about listening to Machinery, it has that same feeling of like physical machinery in the sense that it is like creaking and warping and like never the same, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
same way with a record. If you were like in a factory and you're listening to like this, you know, just welding arm like moving and working, it would never sound exactly the same because it's an analog piece of equipment, you know? It's always going to sound a little different based on the air pressure, based on the angle, based on the whatever.
I mean,
like this record,
that's the exact same way like a synthesizer is too, you know? I mean, like literally the temperature it's operating at changes it, you know?
Right. And I feel like this record like has that organic feel all over it. I love like on Letterell, you know, there's like this kind of woozy metallic sound, like kind of layered into these kind of sweeping strings and this like really high pitched like whir, which is an amazing arrangement choice on its own. But that like woozy metallic sound is like, it's kind of like pulsing and warping, you know, like in a very like organic way. Like though I think about like, you know, I love like, I don't know, like Sun or Boris or something. Like when you listen to that kind of drone, you know, you're hearing like, they could never play it exactly the same way. Right. Because it's like woozing and like pulsating and like different sounds are affecting each other. And like the amp is like shaking and warbling, you know, you hear all that like little granular detail. And I feel like you can hear that in tracks like this. Like Rotar has this kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but like a weird little creeping, I don't know, the low notes on a harpsichord or something. It's pretty like woozy and dreamy, but it's like, you know what I mean? It's like pulsing and like shifting shape, like in the same way that like a guitar drone would.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think that, you know, it is exactly like sort of what they're going for with this record. You know, that, you know, when you talk about like Boris and Sun and stuff, like, you know, that you're listening to it and that amp noise is like really like, so, like the amp becomes a, you know, an instrument in the music. Like what's kind of interesting here is like, they're doing something so similar, but like, you know, we talked about a little bit, like how it really doesn't have like reverb or, you know, it's so like kind of dry. Like it honestly, like the like recording itself almost sounds like it's just, you know, not played on an amp or, you know, like it's just directly, you know, plugged into the recording equipment or something. And it's like really kind of neat to like, you know, when you do that kind of sound, I think it probably is actually played on amps or whatever from interviews I've read. But, you know, when you do that, like sort of kind of like really sterilized kind of sound, you know, that's generally like you're getting rid of that like organicness of it, you know, and a lot of electronic music does that and does it to good extent. But I think like it is like such an interesting thing on this record where they're really like mixing that industrial like thing, but it's not sterile, you know. It's like I said, you know, it's like Blade Runner. It's a dirty mechanical industrial thing, you know. This isn't like a you know, the factory that's building, you know, computer chips or something, you know. This is a, you know, a car factory or something, you know.
Yeah, some
steel and dirty, you know.
Yeah, one of those like weird god, what's that word, you know, like these like weird dystopian movies, how they're always kind of like cyberpunkish, you know, like
it's
archaic equipment or something. I was just watching.
Oh, yeah. Like it's an anachronistic like.
Yeah. I was just watching Brazil. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. That's a good movie.
Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of satirical, but it's like this weird, creaky, shitty equipment, like as if, you know, as if it was the future, but it's like way shittier. but yeah, so I don't know. I love that. I love like the creaking weirdness of this. You know, it's got almost like a warm analog feel to it. That's, you know, it's interesting to note that, I mean, when I was just like knit, I was thinking like, God, some of like the little pretty little synths on this have such a like nice organic woos to them that like, I mean, Boards of Canada must have been loving this track, you know? And it's like their first, like, I guess, real proper release, Twoism, comes out the same year. But it's like interesting that it a lot of this kind of captures that same like warm analog feeling I get from Boards of Canada, even though it's like much more cold and mechanical and sterile. And I also wanted to highlight like the last track, Radio or Rizdio, you know, just because, again, with that like organic feel to this record, it's kind of amazing that, I mean, it's got like this kind of like snake-like riffs, like kind of like just all twirling around each other and stuff, and yet it kind of like builds in intensity. It's a pretty repetitive track, but it like keeps building in energy. It reminds me of like when Swans plays the same riff for like 25 minutes, or like $75 Bill or something, even like some Can jams, you know? Like, isn't it kind of amazing that they can like build the just the pure intensity of this track over the course of it, you know, where at the end you feel like, ooh, like that was exhausting, you know, because I'm so high, you know, high strung by the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great track, and I think it's a great closer, like for that, that very reason, you know. I mean, it's 10 minutes, you know, a little over 10 minutes, and you're right, you know, it's so repetitive, but building and building and building and building. It's very kind of Swans-esque, and I think there is like one of those little clues we talked about in the title here. I always thought, you know, the A and the S on the keyboard are right next to each other, so I always felt like it's just you know, somebody did a typo. Yeah. That's why I call it Radio, because I think right. It's just a typo on it, but maybe not. Little clue.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, what about the you know, weak points, if any? Let me quiz you. What do you think is the lowest rated track? There's one that's like a little, you know, considerably lower than the others. What do you think that track is on Rate Your Music?
I think it's Stud.
Well, actually, it is Knit.
Oh, okay.
What do you think of Knit?
I really wouldn't guess that it's the lower one. I like it. I mean, I don't think it's a standout in any way, but I don't get why it's lower than anything else.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting track because it's got like a very, you know, it's like, it sounds like a machine like sputtering, like, you know, malfunctioning or something. Like it's like trying, like you imagine like this was supposed to be like a nice song, but your equipment is like fucked up. So it's like everything is not working and just like the synth, something's messed up with it. You got to repair it or something. It's like the whole track is like built out of that. Again, back to my like over the top theory about like listening to the machinery of how music is made, you know, this feels like a malfunctioned song. Like it was supposed to be something else and we're hearing the failed attempt or something. But I, you know, I think it's fascinating. I guess not a standout. I don't think I can even pick a weak point here. Like I just love every second of this record. Do you have like something that jumps out at you as a weak point?
I mean, only if I'm being like a little picky. And it's basically, I really agree with the email that we got. So if you want to just go into that, I think he explains it pretty well. And I actually, that is my weak point.
Wow. Okay. So I wanted to, read this email from listener Blue Shades, who says, "You guys kind of touched on this in the Incunabula episode, but one of the main reasons I love Autechre is the sound design. So if there's a song that has a very basic sound, it totally ruins it for me. For example, I want to like Yuto so much because the synths are amazing, but the drums are just so basic, it totally kills it for me. Garbage Mix is similar, but not as bad. Those snare rolls that come in kind of kill the song for me, and it really doesn't help that they're mixed so loud." We'll get to Garbage in a minute, but I'm amazed you don't like Yuto.
It's not that I don't like it. You know, I'm being picky to find the weak point. And I think the weak point, I completely agree with him about those drums. You know, it is, you know, you've got some of that cool sound design, like, you know, really sort of atmospheric synth going on. And then like really you're getting the most like basic just drum machine on the entire record here. It's like literally just, I mean, it's in 4/4 time, best I can tell. And it just, sounds like a drum machine, you know, like the snare sounds like a snare, the hi-hat sounds like a hi-hat.
It sounds like a drum kit, like an actual, like, tight, like, drum kit is being played.
Exactly. And then partway in the song, it switches to, like, 16th notes on the hi-hat, and it just, like, I don't know. It's just the most, like, normal kind of thing on the record, and I don't know. Like, if it was on Incunabula, I think it would, you know, it might be one of the better songs there or whatever.
Damn, man.
It just feels a little, a bit of a step below the rest of the record here, I think.
Wow. I am shocked. I love Utah. It's like been one of my favorites since way back when I first listened to this album. You know, I never really thought about it because I think the track as a whole works so well, but until we got this email, I didn't really like recognize it. Yeah, it is a very basic drum sound. It really does sound like a drum kit. It's like a very tight drum kit, but you know, the more I thought about it, I was like, well, why doesn't it bother me then? You know, I just think it works because the focus of the song is that like massive synth. I mean, just again, I said it before, but like just the most beefy, like massive synth I've ever heard. It is like an endlessly amazing sound, which, you know, Blue Shades acknowledges, but it's like, I feel like if you had like this really glitchy, like abrasive, you know, beat, like it would detract from the feeling you get from that synth. Like you almost need like something to really stand down, and it almost emphasizes like the distance between this like absolutely crushed wall of synth sound and then this like really tight, like simple little drum kit. You know what I mean? Like the gap between those two things is stunning to me.
The beat itself, I think, is fine. You know, because I agree, you know, it being like sort of a simple, you know, thing, I think works with that juxtaposition, but I just feel like they could have picked, it doesn't even need to be like some crazy drum thing or real glitchy or something. I just feel like they could have picked, you know, better drum sounds, like, you know, just more interesting, like ones that don't just sound like a drum kit. I mean, cause there's really few other places on this record that like legitimately sounds like just, you know, a regular old kit.
This is something I kind of like about this record. It's kind of rare, but like, you know, I was noticing on Clipper, for example, like there's that kind of high synth melody thing that comes in that's like do 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 do, you know, it's like extremely generic acid techno sounding, and somehow it like totally works. Like it just is like fit into this absolutely alien track. We didn't talk about Clipper really, but like that was another kind of like My Bloody Valentine Only Shallow moment for me. Like that, how the whole track like almost came to a stop and then you got this like huge sweeping synth noise. Like, holy shit, what a way to build a track. but you know, that like weird acid techno thing is like totally, I mean, you could hear that same sound on a million records from the early 90s. And yet the juxtaposition within this completely alien track to me is like amazing. And it actually, so it makes the rest of the track feel more alien to me, but it also kind of like makes me appreciate the roots of these sounds, like how, you know, it reminds me of those like hip hop b-boy like roots and everything. And it's, and like the acid house and the techno and everything. And it's like, I don't know. I like the juxtaposition there. I love the juxtaposition in Uto. You know what I mean at all?
Yeah, I mean, and I agree. I mean, like I said, I'm really just picking it because, you know, the podcast isn't interesting if there's no criticism, you know, if we just gush over it. You know, I mean, I think this is a 10 out of 10 record, you know, which, you know, by that very thing means that it's a perfect record to me, you know. But like I said, you know, it just... I have to pick something, you know, I think that those kind of things are the closest things to shortcomings that we've got here.
Yeah, well, this might be like my gushiest episode in the entire series, which might explain why we're already going way longer than I wanted to.
Yeah,
go,
I just noticed that.
Some of these episodes are going to be long. There's nothing we could do about it. Finally, I wanted to ask, you know, about the sort of sequencing, the cohesion of this record. It's kind of a weird thing, isn't it? That like the A side is just five like juggernauts, like lumbering kind of juggernauts. And then Uto, the kind of energy picks up a lot and the tracks get a lot shorter and like just breeze by one after another almost until we get to, I mean, things settle down a lot in Overand, but until we get to Radio, which is kind of back to the early style of the record. But that's kind of like a weird sequencing choice, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, this record is really on two discs. So really there's an A side, a B side, a C side, and D side. So I think maybe it works a little better like that. I'll just say what it is. It's Dale and Clipper are the A, Littrell, Rotar, Stud, B, Uto, CPAC, to knit, C side, and then Overand and Radio on the D, which I think works.
Well, still, then the C side is like just a little blitz of the shortest songs by far.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it may just be because to fit it, I could have done this earlier, but the math of the record sides, it might just work out that way. But I think overall the sequencing is decent. You know, I think it's like the record in and of itself has this like really you know, built sound to it. You know, it feels very cohesive. I think Dale is in a perfect place, you know, like we said, you know, Radio, I think, is a perfect closer. Sure, you could probably move things around. I think that whole C side, you know, Uto, CPAC, Knit could, you know, if you switched any of those around with each other, I don't think it would change things too much.
I think they lead kind of nicely because like Uto and CPAC are pretty like danceable, high energy, and then Knit and Overand like kind of like mellow us out a ton
that's
before
true.
We get into the big finale. But I don't know. It's just, I mean, I think it works. I wouldn't change a thing about it, but it's like weird how once you get to track six, you know, you do kind of like change the vibe quite a lot. But in a way it's kind of like, I don't know, if every track was like an 8 minute, like lumbering beast, it might get tiring. So it's nice to have like that little sprint until you get to the finish, you know? I don't know. It's just, it's an interesting choice, but I feel like if I tried to mix it around, it would all pale in comparison to what they came up with here. And maybe you need that little burst of energy. I did want to mention before we move on that there is a Japanese bonus track, Medjury, which I listened to for the first time yesterday. And I thought it was awesome. It reminded me of Knit a little bit, but like honestly kind of cooler. I don't know. I think, you know, we didn't really want to address it because we're talking about it as the album as an album, you know, but have you ever listened to this track?
Yeah, I saw someone send it to us on Twitter. I hadn't ever heard it before, so yesterday was the first time I listened as well. I just went through it a couple times. YouTube that streams in 192, so I can't be dealing with that. So I didn't want to go in too much, but I did like it, and it really made me, next time I'm bored at night. I think I'm going to hunt down all the Japanese bonus tracks that I don't already have. Because I don't know how that slipped by me.
I was thinking,
someone on Twitter told us a few other ones.
Thinking we could do like we'll do some kind of like bonus episode on like all of the Japanese bonus
tracks. Yeah,
we'll rank all of the Japanese bonus tracks or something like that. It would be fun. Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about we're running long, but there's so much to say about the context of this record. I always like to, you know, kind of do the record first and then we can kind of zoom out. You know, we've pretended like it's 1995. We could zoom out a little bit now. But, you know, there are a lot of electronic classics that come out the same year. They all seem to be going in kind of different directions as we talked about last time. You know, in 1994, it seemed like a lot of these big releases were almost in the same kind of ambient territory, but now they're like all kind of branching out. So you got like Aphex Twins, I Care Because You Do, Left Field's Leftism, Mouse on Mars's Iaora Tahiti, I don't know how to pronounce that, but I love that record, the Black Dog Spanners, you know, these are just a few. There are quite a few more. I mentioned that Boards of Canada hits the scene with Twoism. So that was kind of interesting to note, just that I don't think any of that sounds much like Trirepite. Another thing that jumped out at me though is Björk's Post, which is like probably one of the best albums of this year. And it's obviously not the first, you know, not the first time that like electronic music and alternative, you know, pop are colliding or whatever. But I do feel like this might be the first time that you start to see the influence of Warp specifically.
Yeah.
Autechre, which will become huge. I just wanted to kind of like, you know, bookmark this thought because it's something we'll definitely talk about, you know, by the time we get to like Kid A and stuff, like Autechre is a huge influence on one of like the biggest, you know, bands in the world and everything. And, you know, just interesting to note that you can sort of hear it here. Another thing that jumped out at me is Oval's 94 Discount comes out this year, and Panasonic's debut LP, when they were Panasonic, Vecchio, or however you pronounce it, those both come out this year. You know, these are kind of like two really iconic glitch artists, and I feel like Tri-Repete is very much in this glitch wave, you know? We mentioned it earlier, but Autechre does not stick with the Tri-Repete sound for long at all, but I wonder if they did, do you think they would be like an Oval or a Panasonic, like titans of glitch specifically?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you look at these two lists, you know, you put together, I think Tri-Repete fits way more in the Oval Panasonic list than, yeah, than they do, yeah, you know, Black Dog, Aphex, and all that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one reason I love this record so much. I mean, Oval's 94 Discount is like one of my favorite records. It's definitely one of my favorite electronic records, but you know, I love it just as a record. I love Panasonic. That'd be another fun band to do a podcast on.
Hey,
going through the whole thing. But you know, yeah, I think definitely like Tri-Repete like stands along with both of those records and both of those groups, you know, later records even. So yeah, I think they definitely, you know, if they stuck this out, I think they definitely would be in that, you know, Panasonic Oval kind of territory.
Just funny that we don't really think of them like, you know, you don't think like, oh, Panasonic, Oval, Autechre, you know, like in the same group. But you know, if you're just going off Tri-Repete, I mean, you almost should. You know, you want to talk about like feeling like you're listening to your equipment, your music equipment malfunctioning.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Oval and Panasonic are like the absolute kings of that. Yeah, just interesting to note what's going on, and we'll continue to do that. But let's put a bow on this because we still got to get to Garbage and the Anvil Vapor EPs. How did it go revisiting Tri-Repete this these past 2 weeks? Do you have any new thoughts, revelations?
No, I mean, it was super fun. It's you know, I was really looking forward to it. You know, usually when we finish one of these, I take a day or two and listen to you know, kind of what I want to before getting back into, you know, digging into things. But I yeah, literally, as soon as we finished like recording that night, I listened to Tri-Repete when I went to bed, and you know, I absolutely love it just as much as I always have. And it really had been a little bit of time since I got into it, because when I go to Autechre, you know, nowadays I tend to go you know, a little later in the yeah, canon. You know, I like XI a lot. I did go to LSEC and stuff this week a little bit, just out of, I always try not to, but I couldn't do it. So you know, it had been a while, but yeah, I mean, I loved it just as much as I always have, I think.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, I feel like I found a new appreciation for the kind of like slapability of this record, like the the hip hopness and like the grooviness that some of, you know, these listeners mentioned. Wasn't something I would have like that would have come first to my brain, but maybe just like coming off of Amber into this, I realized like what a strange left turn it is actually, and that,
yeah,
it's like, mm-hmm, they were maybe like not embracing their strengths as much as they could have. Not to like say anything bad about Amber, which I love, but it's like, this just feels like, okay, they stopped trying to like be something they're not. They stopped trying to like run from, you know, dance music. They just figured out a way to totally reinvent it, and I just appreciate that a lot more this time. Yeah, I don't know. The question that everybody always has to ask, which I don't even like to ask really, but, you know, think about like hints of future Autechre buried in Tri-Repete. You know, I honestly feel like, and we'll return to this obviously as we move forward, but I just feel like Chiastic Slide is a little bit in the same realm, but that they kind of like veer in a totally different direction. And in my opinion, it makes Tri-Repete like more special, you know, because it's just kind of like this singular thing. I mentioned like they might have been considered icons of glitch if they had stuck with this. They didn't. And then you just get like this magical little thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you want to scratch the Tri-Repete itch, you can't listen to anything but just this one, just Tri-Repete. That's all there is that has ever made this exact kind of like vibe and sound, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. And I'm glad that they didn't just keep making Tri-Repetes. And I think that's why they become, you know, such titans of electronic music and stuff. You know, I mean, I like Oval and all, but you know, he's kind of stuck in this thing with, if you just want to hear, you know, what Oval's about, 94 Discount is the way to go. You know, he's got other records I enjoy, but you know,
right,
you start there, and you know, that's the only one I think that is a must hear kind of thing. Whereas, you know, Autechre continues growing, changing, and releases, you know, a lot more, you know, must hear kind of music.
Yeah, well, we ready to talk garbage?
Yeah. On February 27th, 1995, less than 4 months after Amber and a full 8 months before Tri-Repete, Autechre released their third EP, Garbage, once again with Warp Records. Reportedly, this EP is comprised of leftovers from the Amber sessions, and if you look real closely, you'll see that the cover depicts a digitally screwed up version of Amber's cover art. Nevertheless, Garbage is generally seen as a transition between Amber and Tri-Repete. AllMusic, for instance, calls it a key turning point in Autechre's career and notes that the sound is still rooted in their earliest releases, but beginning to fully flower here.
Yeah, on that note, the Garbage EP is pretty much universally acclaimed, sometimes considered the best Autechre EP of all time. In fact, it's the only bolded Autechre EP on Rate Your Music with an average rating of 3.72. That's higher than all but a few Autechre albums. And here's one more trivia fact for you. Originally, every song ended with a number corresponding with the percentage of the total EP time that the track takes up. Apparently, it took like a decade for anybody to figure that out. But every release since then, those numbers are gone. So we're not going to like try to mention the numbers every time. We'll just call them their normal unpronounceable names to the best of our abilities. So the Garbage EP, was this somewhat new to you, Dan?
No, because, here in America, the CD version of Tri-Repete was right. Tri-Repete plus, so it had Garbage and Anvil Vapor on it, and you know, when I first got Tri-Repete and stuff, it was that version, and honestly, right. I don't think I knew for a while that I always had it on the computer and I would merge two discs. You know, I always just thought it was one record, until I like actually started to care about the group and stuff. So I knew Garbage, and then Garbage was once I got more into Autechre, Garbage is one of the better EPs, so it is one of the EPs that I'll listen to kind of more frequently than, especially more frequently than the ones we already discussed.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was like I also got the Tri-Repete plus first, and but I just thought it was like a disc of bonus tracks. Like I knew that it wasn't. I knew that the first disc was the album, but I didn't know that it was like two distinct like releases or something. I would just kind of like sometimes listen through those bonus tracks and be like, wow, these are awesome, but I didn't like think of it as its own thing. And then now that I know, I still mostly listen to it just as like part of the EP's box set or something. It's like rarely do I just start with Garbage Mix and go through to the end of it on its own. So this was maybe the first time that I was just like going through these four tracks over and over again and really trying to think of them as like a distinct thing, which is probably a shame because it's got a serious like flow. It feels like very organized, which we'll talk about. So how would you describe the overall sound of Garbage?
I think AllMusic like does a pretty good job. That this is like it really is kind of the bridge between Amber and Tri-Repete. It's got sort of like those kind of atmospheric sweeping sort of sounds that we get with Amber, but it's really like bringing in the kind of glitchiness of Tri-Repete as well. I don't know if it really is just outtakes from Amber or something, or yeah. Maybe they were outtakes that they
saved,
decided purposely to work or tried to work more on. It brought it up to the style of Tri-Repete, but it really does like feel like the missing link between those two records.
Yeah, I think it's almost a shame. I mean, I know that this is probably nobody's experience in the whole world, but I wish that in some alternative universe I could have like listened to Garbage before listening to Tri-Repete and Amber, because I have a hard time not thinking of it as like a halfway point between these two records, and it makes it feel almost like a little disjointed, because I feel like Garbage Mix is so, it's like very, very Tri-Repete territory. Mm-hmm. Like a weird, pretty distorted, like abstract beat, kind of like constructed out of, like a tape on the Fritz, like a garbled tape or something, just stuff like that. And then it kind of moves into like very, very amber territory, you know, like with this like Piab mix, just tons of delays and like echoes and like just really dense, you know, it just sounds so amber to me. In fact, after like, you know, 2 weeks away from amber, I was surprised to find that I was like kind of missing that ambery goodness. And I was really enjoying like these two middle tracks here because I was like, hell yeah, that's an amber sound. I should note that like when you get to the last track, Vletter Mix, it's a very, I don't know, openly emotive, like synth, you know, synth piece and, you know, almost in sign territory in a weird way. But like much more of a crescendo feel, like more cinematic feel to it almost. That to me is like kind of uniquely amber. So what I'm saying is like, I feel like you get like a Tri Repete track, you get a couple amber tracks, and then you get like a garbage track. And I almost have a hard time seeing it as like one unified sound. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like why I kind of think of it a little bit of a, you know, bridge, because, you know, like we said, you know, it doesn't seem so cohesive and, you know, one unified kind of thing, because it seems to be like in transition between those two kind of like styles.
Yeah. And it almost like literally, I mean, it's like in reverse, but it almost literally moves from one style to the other, which is kind of bizarre. You know, when we say it's an EP, I mean, I think it's something we got to address, and we'll probably have to address numerous times again, but it's like 40 minutes long. You know, it's the length of most people's albums. You know, do you think it's like fair to kind of think of this as like an EP, meaning, you know, lesser than an album? Should it be considered just a release as significant as any other?
You know, somebody posted on Twitter like a older interview they had done with Autechre. It was some music writer. I can't remember who it was now, but I read through it. I think it was from like 97 or something. And I think it was with Rob, and he says that like basically, you know, he calls the EPs an EP because like legally with the record company, like, you know, they can only release, you know, an album a year or whatever it is. And so it's just sort of like they want to release something, and so legally it has to be called an EP or something, which, I mean, I'm sure there's some truth to it, especially later on when we get EPs that are, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours long. But, you know, I mean, it's 40 minutes, which is not a full length record, especially, you know, by Autechre standards. I mean, it is normal standard, not Autechre standards. So, I mean, I think there's at least some sort of thought into it being an EP, you know, it being shorter. I mean, maybe the record label wouldn't let them put, you know, two discs out, you know, or something. So they had to trim it to 40 minutes or something. Yeah. You know, those kind of things are always possible. But I mean, yeah, I think with Autechre, it's a little, the line is very blurred between what's an EP, what's an album, you know, what's important, what's not, kind of.
I agree with that. And I, you know, I read that interview too, and he is kind of like dismissive, like, oh, we just have to call it an EP or whatever, you know. And like, and yet, you know, like I mentioned before, like they seem to be pretty serious about like the distinction, because like they name XI, you know, 11, and it's our 11th album. And if they considered like Garbage an album just under the name of an EP for like contractual reasons, they wouldn't call it 11. You know, like they're always like reminding you like, this is our album, which means it's a big statement. So I just almost don't even like believe Rob in that interview. Maybe that's how he felt at the time and doesn't feel that way now, but
is that interview before was it before LP5? I guess he could have changed his mind, you know, because that's the first one that like objectively is called, you know, the number of
I mentioned it earlier, but it's like they're always like a little coy in their interviews. I feel like they're just not telling the truth, like to kind of
obfuscate. It's that unreliable you know, narrator kind of thing. Same thing Dylan does, another reason
right I'm and I appreciate that, I really do. You know, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it has a clear construction. I mean, it feels like Garbage Mix, to me, would have been like one of the best songs on Tri Repete if it was on there. It's like an absolute knockout. It is just this, I mean, you know, I don't even know how to like sum it all up, but just like the way it's very Tri Repete style, like slowly unfurls and like grows, and like these different like you know, there's some of that like string work, you know, from like Silverside, but that appears again on like Letterell and stuff, you know, just kind of like keeps growing and layering on top of each other. And it's just like such a mammoth, like massive statement, I think. And then, like I said, it kind of moves into, it seems to move into like increasingly minimalist territory after this like really grand, like absolutely amazingly large track, until you emerge out of the other side of this kind of like weird abstract darkness, with this like really gorgeous synth piece. So it flows like an album, like a really constructed piece. And yeah, my only hang up is like, I feel like the transition from Garbage Mix into Piob Mix, it's like a little abrupt, you know? It's like, it's like almost like they went too minimal too fast at, immediately after Garbage, which kind of like makes it feel a little bit more of like an assortment of tracks than a perfectly flowing unified piece.
Yeah, I can see that. And I mean, and maybe that speaks to why it's an EP, you know. I mean, when you've only got four tracks, you know, 40 right. minutes to play with, it's harder to like slowly get to somewhere you're going. So maybe it's just a, you know, limitation of the medium. But yeah, I could definitely agree with that.
Well, let me quiz you here, talking about, you know, best tracks, not that there's a lot to choose from, but there are three there are three bolded tracks here and one unbolded. What do you think that one unbolded track is?
All right. The one unbolded, probably the last one, V Letter Mix.
Really? Are you
just
crazy?
Just because it's you know, more ambient or whatever. I just feel like plebs are not going to go for it.
Well, my sense is that is like one of like the plebs' favorite Autechre songs, because it's like really, really beloved, really highly rated here. It's you know, if you read Write Your Music, it's like every review seems to like, you know, shout that one out, because it is like shockingly emotive. It is like very like openly emotive. And to me, it's like kind of a highlight here, because it's like, I don't know, it's almost fascinating, because it's got like a, it reminds me of like Explosions in the Sky or something. And because basically what you've got are like these, like, you know, it sounds like the Explosions in the Sky style, like tremolo picking, you know, there's a lot of like movement in these kind of like glimmering chords, and they really like swell, you know, like they rise to such like a crescendo, and then they kind of like drop back down with like low pass filter play and stuff, and then they kind of like slowly crescendo again. And it's like, it's funny, because I feel like Explosions in the Sky, I mean, they're a little bit after this, I guess, but they are trying to use guitars to make them sound like synths almost, and then
yeah,
here you have Autechre making synths, like almost trying to make them sound like guitars or something, like breaking them up with these like little tremolo sounds. Interesting. Like, I feel like they were both going for the same kind of feeling, but like coming at it from the opposite side, which is funny. But, you know, it's something I wanted to mention this earlier, actually, in the sense of like, you know, I compared like Radio to Swans and stuff. You know, it's like a big part of Autechre's, you know, influence on alternative music, which is, you know, coming right around the corner here, is like, I don't know, I feel like it almost appeals to rock listeners. Like, it's a nice gateway in some of these tracks. Like, I feel like that's how it worked for me almost. Like, as I was getting into Autechre, there was something about like the building intensity of these tracks that, like, you know, it made it an easy way to slide from the rock world into the electronic world. And like, the flow of this album overall, but also like the grand post-rock style crescendo of this track, must have been very appealing to a lot of listeners. I mean, you know, you're like at this exact time, like Tortoise is coming out, who Autechre will do some remix work with, actually. You know, you've got like, you know, post-rock is kind of about to happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, I can imagine being appealing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it, I don't remember exactly, but I'm sure, you know, that was part of the appeal for myself, because, you know, I got right. into, you know, I love like Godspeed You Black Emperor, and, you know, I was really into Explosions in the Sky, Tortoise, Mogwai, all that stuff, you know, probably around the time I first started getting into Autechre and all. And I'm sure, yeah, that really, you know, assisted me into sliding into to Autechre.
Yeah, I mean, is that a highlight for you? Is Garbage Mix a highlight for you? I mean, what are your favorite tracks here?
Yeah, I mean, when there's only four, it's hard to say. But yeah, I mean, I think Garbage Mix is probably my favorite here. I don't really have any, you know, dislikes. I mean, when there's only four tracks, again, it's really hard to choose.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for me, it's like the first and the last track are the obvious standout. I feel like a lot of people feel that way. I do love, like I said, the ambery goodness of those middle two tracks. And yet, you know, I agree that Pyob Mix, you know, it's the lowest rated on Rate Your Music. And I understand why, because it might be a little monotonous a bit, because it's like, you know, I mentioned on Amber, like there were points where it was like so dense with like so many delays where it's like maybe you're overdoing it a little bit here. And that track is nothing but things just delaying out. I mean, it's got like kind of a tribally drum vibe, but like every drum has a bunch of delays on it. So it's like just echoing and echoing and echoing. Also funny to note that like the little central sound in that kind of like tribal drum vibe is like kind of like a proto radio sound. Like from radio, there's like this, you know, central sound. It sounds like a hollow tube or something. Like there's like a little, you know, they didn't quite nail it here yet, but it's like they were kind of grasping for that same sound and nailed it on Tri Repete. You know, I think Bronchus 7 mix, it's either Bronchus 7 or Bronchus Even mix, whatever. interesting track because it feels like so drippy and dubby, and like it feels like an Amber song if the song was missing and all you could hear were the delays and the weird reverbs and stuff. I appreciate it conceptually, but I don't know, do you never get like bored in the middle of these two tracks or anything?
I mean, I definitely, the middle is sort of the you know, the more quote unquote boring of it. But I mean, I it's so short at only 40 minutes. I feel like there's not time to get bored with it. Yeah. You know, I love this EP. I don't get bored during it.
Yeah. And I appreciate the journey. I mean, I don't think that Valletter mix would hit as hard if you hadn't
waded
through that dark territory. Let me ask you though, you know, Blue Shades, you agreed with them about Yuto and the beat there. Do you agree with them about the garbage mix snare rolls, that they're like too normal and annoying?
No, not as much. You know, I definitely feel them on the Yuto. I felt that about Yuto before he said that, you know. I get what he means with the snare rolls. You know, they are sort of like the kind of, you know, normal sound on that. But I think it works better being, it's outside of Tri Repete. I think they're less normal than the Yuto ones. We're outside of Tri Repete. We're in this sort of, you know, bridge between Amber, Incunabula, and, you know, Tri Repete. So I think it's like, it's more, I think they're used more subtly, and it's just, it's more like allowable in this situation.
Yeah. I feel like I totally forget about them. Like as the track builds and builds, like,
I really didn't think about it. Like when I read his email, you know, I went back and sort of, you know, paid attention to them. And yeah, I mean, when I pay attention to it, I think I get what he means a little more, but it's not as readily apparent. Like Yuto, like I thought that before I read his email, you know what I mean?
I just feel like there's a world of like totally alien and unrecognizable sounds in this track. Like it's just not a big deal. And I don't know, I just love, I gotta say, like the weird, like, you know, there's like chirping and squeaking, and I feel like I'm like, if you're listening to the, you know, the woods, you know, like when you're out in the, like camping or something, like it's so loud, like how many bugs and stuff there are, except for they're all robot bugs is what I feel like I'm listening to. Great song.
I've never been camping, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Sounds kind of like that in the future, maybe. I also wanted to mention A. Traeger, who I mentioned earlier, wrote us in his email. He said, in Pyob Mix, someone is clearly saying, I'm a tractor. I can't find it. I can't hear somebody saying I'm a tractor.
I didn't see that email, or at least that part of it, or I would have looked for it. But just thinking off the top of my head, I don't remember saying that.
Well, write us again and give us a clue, because I can't.
Yeah, give us the time you hear that.
Timestamp. Okay, so do you agree, you know, just wrapping up here, that that Garbage should be considered like one of Autechre's best releases, or do you still feel like it's kind of, you know, below the albums?
You know, they have so many good records that it's like, I don't, you know, when I try to think like what's their best releases, I always sort of think of, you know, if somebody was wanting to get into Odd Techer, you know, what would I recommend to them? And I think like Garbage actually does kind of work in that way. I think, you know, its short length kind of lends itself to it. You know, this somebody who's maybe not like adapted to electronic music or you know, experimental kind of things, like I think 40 minutes of Garbage is a good length. And getting this, you know, you get a little bit of a taste of Tri-Repute, you get a bite of Amber. You know, it's sort of like if you gave that to somebody, you could say like, you know, did you like the first track the most? You know how people always make those slow chart kind of things? Garbage is like a perfect, you know, sort of like, if you like this, you know, go to Amber. If you like this, go to Tri-Repute kind of record. So I think it would be a good, you know, kind of starting point or bridge kind of record. Personally, I don't think I would put it like in the top, you know, personal favorite records, you know, because of that kind of, for those same reasons, you know. I sort of like, if I want Odd Techer, I sort of want like the whole meat and potatoes of it, you know. If I want Amber, I'll listen to Amber. If I want Tri-Repute, I'll listen to Tri-Repute. You know, I do like to put this record on, you know, sometimes, but more often than not, like in the context of that larger EPs thing. But you know, I will put it on, you know, if I just reading for a little bit or something, you know, if I only want 40 minutes. But I don't think I would put it in the tip top, you know, of the discography.
Yeah, I don't think it'll beat a lot of albums for me. I appreciate it as a release. I agree that like maybe a new listener would like it, but I also feel like, I don't know, a new listener should get their, you know, head knocked off by the like overwhelming size of Odd Techer. You know, it's like,
is part of it.
Yeah, you're gonna be lost in like the wilderness of Piob Mix and Broncos Even Mix for a little bit, but you know, you should be lost in that for like a full hour on Amber. I mean, that's real Odd Techer shit. But I, you know, I do think it's like it's pretty masterful, and it's like it's definitely awesome. We already move on to Anvil Vapor.
Yeah. Just 1 month before Tri-Repute, on October 2nd, 1995, Odd Techer released the Anvil Vapor EP, again with Warp Records. I guess we could stop saying that. It's pretty much Warp from here on out. But as with Garbage and Amber, Anvil Vapor is comprised of extra material from the Tri-Repute sessions. The critical reception to this EP has been a little mixed. AllMusic gave it just 3 stars, for example, and Sputnik calls it, quote, a relatively simple and toned-down version of Odd Techer that's good for newcomers. Nevertheless, it's something of a fan favorite with an average rating of 3.55. It's the third highest rated EP in Odd Techer's discography.
Yeah, so was Anvil Vapor new to you?
No, again, you know, it was part of the Tri-Repute Plus, so yeah. I knew from that, and, you know, it's one of the more famous EPs, so I had to listen to it more. I'll say, you know, it's never been a favorite of mine, so it's not one that I listen to a ton. This is the first time I think I've, like, spent time with it alone, like, over and over and over. You know, it's the kind of record I just would listen to, you know, if I'm blowing through the discography or something. I've never really like sat and purposely digested it before.
Yeah, I think it's the same for me. I've never like sat down and been like, you know what, I'm gonna listen to Anvil Vapor. Like, just sort of comes on naturally,
exactly,
as I'm working my way through. Yeah, so let's try to describe the overall sound of Anvil Vapor. You know, I'll say that it does seem much more firmly in the Tri-Repute realm. I never really even appreciated how much closer Garbage is to Amber than Tri-Repute. But this is like pretty firmly Tri-Repute, and yet it's somehow like even gnarlier, like even more distorted and abrasive.
Yeah.
And much, much more aggressive, I think. Just like really slamming drum sounds. I mean, like high octane. I mean, even stuff like, I don't know, Second Scout, right? Like, has like this big thud of a kick drum. You know, it's like always just blasting and booming. It's like kind of that quality that I mentioned in Tri-Repute, but like turned up to 11. I mean, what would you add?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good, you know, definition of it. It really like is firmly Tri-Repute. But yeah, I mean, definitely like more distorted and turned up a bit. You know, I mean, we were talking about those inside sleeve, you know, pictures from Trirepite. You know, the cover of Anvil Vapor is like one of those, but it like, whereas Garbage is like the amber cover glitched. Like this is sort of one of those inner sleeves or similar mechanics, at least, like glitched in the same way. And I think that like is sort of how the you know, the record sounds a bit.
Yeah, that's true. You know, what do you think about Sputnik saying it's simplified and toned down? Because I think I actually agree with that. Like I just had never really thought of it that way, but basically listening to this EP these last 2 weeks, it made me kind of appreciate like Autechre as a whole, or at least Autechre of this period as a whole, in a new way, because I feel like Autechre has this kind of like painterly quality, where, you know, we sort of alluded to it, but it's like, they can kind of, you know, when you look at a painting, it's like it's designed in a way that your eye is going to go somewhere first. Like everybody's eye is going to look to one thing first, and then it's going to look around the canvas, like, you know, in a way that the artist determined, right? You're going to like get to this thing and then to this thing. You know, and Autechre, unlike a lot of musicians, like they have this like absolute skill to do that. And that's how they do the misdirection. You know, that's how you can like not notice that there's melody all over Trirepite, because like, they're distracting you with other, you know, mechanical percussive sounds and stuff. Or sometimes like on the Garbage EP, like on that Broncos Even mix, it's like, sometimes it's like deliberately designed so that you almost don't know what to focus on. And you're just kind of like a drift, you know? But here, I think it's kind of shocking how like straightforward the tracks are. Like there is always like a central melody and your attention is always drawn straight to it, and the rest of the track is like built around that central melody. So in that sense, I do kind of agree it's like almost simplified. What do you think?
Yeah, I do agree with that description. You know, it's like you said, you know, Trirepite like sort of like obscures these melodies and everything, you know, it like makes you think it's colder and more mechanical than it like truly is. Whereas here, yeah, I think that's like much more, you know, simplified, you know, like Second Bad Vilbo, or, you know, the first track.
Right.
Like that's just like a pretty much kind of a banger, you know, like I think the songs on this whole record, like everything's just sort of like, you know, a kind of banging, you know, electronic song. I mean, definitely, you know, it's not like, you know, it still has that like IDM quality or whatever. But yeah, I think it's much more like a, you know, beginner's guide to Trirepite or something.
Yeah, because I don't know, like Second Skep, it's got like this like nice kind of like plucky melody, you know, it's almost like a low bass sound or something. And it's very like catchy. It's like kind of masterful in a Trirepite way, in the sense of it's like a very short loop, but it's like quite mysterious or something. It's like quite intriguing, captivating all the way through, I think. But it's like the thing that I'm clearly supposed to focus on, and it's the thing that my attention immediately goes to. I never forget it's there. You know, like Second Scout has this kind of like wah-wah synth stab thing, you know, that's like a little funky, like quite catchy, and that's the main hook. That's the thing, you know, it's like on Trirepite, it's like the main hook is sometimes like the insane sound, like we were talking about earlier. Here it's like always like a melody type hook usually. So it's, I don't know, it's interesting in that way. I don't think that makes it bad, but it's just as like weird that they seem to have been trying to make just a bunch of bangers. You know, on that note, maybe we can jump ahead since you brought it up, but, well, let me quiz you first, actually. What do you think are the, there's only one bolded track here. What do you think it is?
I think it might be the first one, and for the reason that it is in that email.
So it's actually Second Pang, the last track.
Ah,
it's the only bolded track here, although they're all rated quite well. It's a 3.9 or a 4.0 for all these. But yeah, I did kind of want to jump ahead here to the weak points and mention Blue Shades, who also mentioned in his email, Second Bad Vilbo is one of the most overrated Autechre tracks of all time. And I think the reason it is so liked is because it is one of the few Autechre tracks with an official music video. You know, I've decided that I agree with Blue Shades. I I think I dislike Second Bad Vilbel, sort of. It's got like this insanely distorted, like straight up harsh noise, like distortion, you know, like just this blast of distortion running through it. And actually really cool, like low drone is kind of like mixed into that. And so I don't know, that might make you think it's like kind of a creative, like boundary pushing kind of glitchy noise track or something. But the core of this song is a very generic, like drum and bass breakbeat or something, right? You get what I consider kind of corny, like little guitar clip samples, you know what I'm talking about, like this little blast of like the little guitar hook thing. You even get what is basically like a siren running through like the whole last half of the track, which to me just sounds so like, I don't know, corny rave, like let's put a siren on this so people know that they're supposed to lose their shit, you know, like but what I can't get over is how generic like that breakbeat and that little guitar sample thing is. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with Blue Shades here. You know, it is kind of like, you know, just a cheesy, you know, kind of thing, you know, like we talked about how they said that about like Incunabula and Amber and stuff, but like, and we kind of struggled to see the cheese in those records, but I, you know, like here, I kind of can see the cheese a little bit. Yeah, like it really like at times, like kind of sounds like, you know, like a not very good Aphex Twin, you know, song,
right,
but with that, like, oh, you know, we'll pause for a second and just, you know, do like some real distorted, you know, noise or something to make it interesting. You know, it almost seems like an attempt to have like, you know, I don't want to say a hit because it's not like they thought this was going to be, you know, top right, 40 or right, something, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, those underground kind of hits or, you know, maybe play at like some weird clubs that would play something, you know, like this, you know, it almost like feels like an attempt at something like that, but I mean maybe they at least had the good sense not to put it on Trirepite.
I mean, I feel like almost it's like the same animating spirit, which is like, you know, that review that mentioned that like it's sort of a return to their roots of like hip-hop and electro and all this stuff. And I feel like there is a lot of that on Trirepite, but it's been like so transformed and reinvented. Here it's like the same idea, but they just straight up slap a generic ass breakbeat on it. And, you know, I will say in its defense that the like last little bit of the song, that beat gets kind of like changed, and it becomes unrecognizable. You can tell it's composed from the same pieces, but it's been like maybe more autecharized. But it's maybe like too little too late. It's like just been sort of a slightly generic song throughout, even despite that like absolutely shredded harsh noise stuff, which I should mention, my girlfriend who also hates Autechre, hates this song maybe most of all. She was like, I hate this song. It's too scary. That sound is, she's like, that sound is like the ominous whoosh from Twin Peaks, which is pretty accurate. So are there any high points here? Do you have a favorite track?
I don't know that I have like a specific favorite track here on this EP. In fact, I'll say in general, I think, you know, focusing on this EP, I sort of started to like it less than I always kind of thought I did. You know, I think like before this podcast, I would have said that Anvil Vapor was, you know, like a pretty good, you know, maybe a essential, you know, kind of EP. But I really, you know, after listening to it over and over, I like really kind of started to, I don't want to say dislike it, but just my enthusiasm waned, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of agree. It was like the first time I put it on when we, you know, first finished the Amber episode, I was like, damn, this is awesome. Like, this is, you know.
Yeah.
And then it was like, after several listens, I started to be like, God, you know, they're a little simple and there's just not like enough to kind of like stay lost in over the course of 2 weeks of like tons of listening.
It was hard not to just keep going back to Trirepite, you know, like to be like, oh, I have to listen to Anvil, you know,
Yeah. By the end, I started to be like, I mean, I perfectly enjoyed listening to Garbage, but like by the end, I started to be like, whoops, I should probably throw on Anvil Vapor because I didn't listen to it, you know,
exactly,
in a couple days or whatever. You know, I will say that Second Pang is probably my favorite here. It's got like a cool dubby vibe. It's got like that nice metallic, like woozy sound that a lot of those instruments I was praising on Tri Repete have. Yeah, but I like how like the beat is like, it's kind of lopsided, you know, in like a dub way. It's like on the one and then like on the two the next go around. And it's just like a really, you know, I will say that like the track doesn't change much over its like very long running time, but it's certainly like the most interesting, I think, construction here. I forgot to mention, you know, Blue Shades brought up the second Bad Vilbel video. What do you make of that?
I was honestly, I didn't know Autechre had any music videos. so I'm glad he brought it to our attention. But, you know, I mean, it was okay. It just is like sort of, I mean, it's that Chris Cunningham kind of thing. It was just like sort of random pictures and like a spooky guy. And
yeah, it reminded me, it had like a very like grungy 90s. It reminded me of like a Tool video or something.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. I was thinking like, why did they make that, you know, before YouTube, who's gonna, you know, is this gonna be on Much Music or something?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of funny. It's like, I don't know, it's kind of charming in that way. Like, it just feels like a very 90s like kind of relic. It does have some of that same like mechanical imagery from like the, you know, album sleeves and stuff. And I don't know, you know, it's not bad. I will say that like the track gets kind of like completely butchered for the purposes of the video, you know, like they kind of, it yeah, has to be like 4 minutes long, so it's just like a few loops of like the first thing, then like a long siren breakdown, a few more loops, long breakdown. It's like a little awkward, but I don't know, like the videos, it's like kind of corny in a 90s way. And I also, you know, as we were talking about earlier, I don't always love when Autechre is giving us some imagery to associate with their work, because I like the like totally freeing nature of having nothing to go by. But that being said, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, that's basically how I felt about it. You know, I'll never watch it again.
Okay, well, we've kind of already talked about our overall impressions of this. Maybe we should move on to ranking all the stuff we've talked about so far. And on that note, I want to clarify that we're getting a little bit more professional here, because you know, in the first couple episodes, we didn't have a lot to rank, so we were just kind of like getting to this point and being like, you know, setting it up. But now we're going to start preparing in advance, and I think we're just going to go ahead and rank everything we've talked about. So Dan, you've kind of prepared it in advance. I wonder, with this new stuff added in, maybe you can go like from number 8 to number 1. What is your ranking of everything we've talked about so far?
Yeah, well, I think the obvious number 8 is a Cavity Job, followed by Anti EP, then Lego Feet, Anvil Vapor, Garbage, Incunabula at number 3, Amber at number 2, and then Tri Repete at number 1.
Okay, we're almost the same. I got number 8 Cavity Job, 7 Anti EP, 6 Lego Feet, 5 Anvil Vapor, 4 Incunabula, 3 Garbage, 2 Amber, 1 Tri Repete.
So just one switched around right there.
Yeah, that could change a little bit, but I don't know, I was just feeling like yeah, maybe Garbage doesn't like flow perfectly, but I just feel like the mastery of the first track especially is like on just another level from Incunabula. And then there's also like a lot to love about those remaining tracks. So I felt like if I was going to pick something, I would probably pick it. I would probably reach for Garbage before I reach Incunabula. Any closing thoughts on this now quite lengthy chapter of the Autechre journey?
No, I mean, you know, it was fun. I had been, you know, once we started this, I was looking forward to getting to Tri Repete. You know, obviously it's sort of the big one here. You know, and I had fun digging into it. It was nice, even though I kind of came away liking Anvil Vapor less than I thought I did before. You know, it was nice to like force myself to realize that. You know, sometimes with these EPs and plenty of stuff coming up, you know, I've only listened to a handful of times, or I've always like listened to it in the context of another way of approaching it, and you know, I've never like really sunk my teeth deeply into it. So it was kind of nice to see that I really am not as big of a fan of that as I thought I may have been.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, love all this shit. Love this whole period in Autechre. Obviously, Tri Repete remains one of my favorite albums of all time. you know, that being said, I'm pretty excited to move on to, you know, we're now leaving, I think, the objective classic period and getting into the more, you know, more, a little more controversy, a little more diversity of opinion about some of the records that we're going to be talking about next, especially the next one. So, yeah, I don't know. There's some pressure to like try to talk about Tri Repete. Like, how do I talk about this absolute masterpiece?
But yeah, yeah, exactly.
It'll be fun to get into some weirder stuff.
I agree. Well, what do you think about Tri Repete, Garbage, and Anvil Vapor? Remember, next week we're going to do a bonus episode, and it's going to be all your emails. Plus, we're also going to look at the Basecad EP, which we skipped because people told us we shouldn't skip it. And yeah, we figured, you know, what the hell not. So we'll go for it. So send your thoughts. Let us know what you think on any of those things or any Oddtaker stuff at all. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode gonna be in 2 weeks. Chiastic Slide, In Vain, probably Sickly Sweet. If you guys want it, let us know. Let us know all that, of course. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. if you like the show, help us up, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all that junk is at gonkcastpod, although I don't think that's what the YouTube is. Just search Goncast Pod. You'll there find you it, whatever. And we'll see you next time. Not too professional yet. We'll see you next time. See ya.
See ya.